Loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker. Today marks the 5 years since WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange sought asylum in Ecuador. In a half decade since then, Assange has been prevented by British authorities from leaving the Ecuadorian embassy in London, despite the UN finding last year that he has been the subject of arbitrary detention. His case and the campaign against WikiLeaks have caused a global debate over whistleblowing that rages until today. To discuss the importance of Assange and of WikiLeaks, we are joined today for the full hour in studio by Ray McGovern. He's an activist and a former CIA analyst whose writings can be found on raymcgovern.com. We're also joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine Person of the Year along with two other whistleblowers. And we are joined from Maryland by Bill Binney, a former NSA technical director who has become a legendary whistleblower. Welcome, Ray, Colleen, and Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, Colleen. Hi, Bill. Ray McGovern, you're here in studio. 5 years, that's amazing. 5 years since Julian Assange sought refuge, sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy. When you think about it 5 years later, what's the big takeaway?
Well, he committed the unpardonable sin, and that is exposing the secrets that show what these wars have been like and what our diplomacy has been like. There are several key junctures at which cables were written or people were shot up that are all recorded now for history and for current events to allow people to make their own judgments as to what's going on. That's verboten in the United States media. They hate him. They hate him for lots of reasons. First and foremost, most people don't realize that it was Julian Assange that got Ed Snowden out of Hong Kong. He gets very little credit for that. But when I asked him about that, I said, how many reports did you get out of Ed Snowden? He said, zero. I said, well, why did you expend all that capital? Call in all your chits in the Far East to get him out of there, get him to Moscow. And he said, look, he said, one whistleblower had to make it. One person had to be able to do what Ed Snowden did and escape imprisonment, escape worse. And so we did it. Now, that's a person who's generous, who sees an ideal that needs to be achieved, and is willing to suffer whatever people throw at him for having let people become aware of what's going on.
We have this esteemed panel, Colleen Raleigh, FBI whistleblower, Bill Binney, technical director, former technical director of the NSA, and Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, talking about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and what it means and what he means and what WikiLeaks means for the world and for media 5 years after Julian Assange sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy. I want to go back for the three of you, and then Bill Binney, I'll cut to you and ask you. I want to play a short, very short audio clip from Julian Assange that he made during a speech shortly after arriving at the Ecuadorian embassy. Let's listen to the voice of Julian Assange.
The U.S. administration's war on whistleblowers must end. Thomas Drake, William Binney, John Kerouacou, and other heroic whistleblowers must be pardoned or compensated for the hardships they have endured as servants of the public record.
Bill Binney, that's not the first time you heard that clip. There it is, Julian Assange taking refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy, paying homage to you and to Tom Drake and to John Kerouacou, and demanding compensation and relief for that which you suffered. When you hear his voice, when you hear him talking about you and the other whistleblowers today, 5 years later, what do you think?
Well, I think he's just doing, he's trying to do the job that the mainstream media and the media in general is supposed to do, and that's tell the truth about what our government's doing in our name. You know, the rest of the mainstream media has all been intimidated. They're too afraid to even investigate some of these things that have been exposed by, you know, through Julian, by various people like, you know, Snowden and so on. And he made that possible. He helped in that. And also with the, you know, Chelsea Manning and all the crimes that our government have been committing in our name. And they've never, and all they do, all our government does is try to refocus on those who expose their crimes. That's a big problem I see. We have more criminals in charge of the U.S. government than are running around inside the country, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, those people need to be tried, indicted, tried, and explain what they did in public in a courtroom, and show the reasons why they did it, and let the judge make the decision on their outcome. I mean, that's fundamentally what I think about it. I mean, that's why I quit NSA, because they were violating the constitutional rights of every U.S. citizen. And then it got even worse after that. So then they went into rendering and torture and all kinds of things. And that was all led by Darth Cheney.
Darth Cheney. Colleen Rowley, Bill Binney's, that's a strong indictment of the politicians and the bureaucrats. But if you listen to the mainstream media, it's Julian Assange who is the criminal. And clearly Julian Assange feels and fears that if he were to walk out of that embassy, that he would be jailed, he would be extradited to the United States, he would be inside of a jail cell perhaps for the rest of his life. Is Julian Assange a criminal?
Well, that goes without saying that he's not a criminal. If we have a First Amendment, if we have a First Amendment right, and to be honest, after 9/11 and with John Yoo's Office of Legal Counsel memos, that secret memos, people didn't know, but John Yoo was saying we didn't really have a First Amendment rights. So I think the good news is that after 5 years, he is still there and operating. Really, I have to say, my amazement, and you know, I'm in awe to some extent, because if you think about living in such a little space with no sunlight and still being able to work with other WikiLeaks staff and actually publish all these 5 years, there's been a series of things published. It didn't stop when he went into the embassy or took asylum. And on top of it, if you consider that plagiarism is the highest form of flattery, some of the mainstream press, now I totally agree with Binney that they are not doing their job in the sense of publishing the truth about government actions. However, a lot of them at least give the appearance that they're copying WikiLeaks, in the sense that they're always publishing sources and actually in some ways pretending they have whistleblowers. And so, and they've come up with ways to secretly leak information. So that kind of copying on the part of mainstream news is actually a compliment to the power of WikiLeaks.
Julian Assange, Ray McGovern, describes WikiLeaks as a media outlet. And, you know, the other media use WikiLeaks. I mean, gosh, I mean, most of the big news that's come out in the last couple of years has come from WikiLeaks. And it wasn't just about Iraq. It was also about Afghanistan. It was Cablegate. It was the WikiLeaks revelations about the Podesta emails and the DNC. But the same media, they don't demand freedom for Julian Assange. I mean, it's quite interesting. They'll publish the stuff, like they published Snowden's stuff, but they're perfectly content to sort of join the chorus, demonizing these same journalists who are releasing information that otherwise the public would not know about.
Well, you're right. What we have is an establishment, which includes the media. We have really a deep state kind of complex, CIA, FBI, NSA leading the pack, and the all-important ancillary establishment is the media. They do not like Julian Assange, but they, as you say, are happy to print some of his stuff. Now, there are exceptions. Now, let me point out one. We have a cable from Moscow, courtesy of Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange, dated February 1, 2008. What happened then? Well, there were rumors that NATO would incorporate Ukraine. And so Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, called our ambassador, Bill Burns, in. He said, Mr. Burns, do you know what Nyet means? And Burns said, well, of course I do. He said, well, Nyet means Nyet. If you so much as try to incorporate Ukraine into NATO, there will be a division in Ukraine, there will be civil war, and we Russians will have to decide whether or not we have to intervene. Do you understand that, Mr. Burns? And he said, yes. Now, Burns, a professional diplomat, sent that cable back. And if I've seen one cable, I've seen 5,000 Moscow cables. This one was numbered, number 265 of 2008. And he faithfully rendered exactly what Lavrov told him. The title was, Nyet means Nyet, Moscow's red line for admission of Ukraine to NATO. That was 2008. 3 months later, 2 months later, a NATO summit decided that Ukraine will become part of NATO. And if you fast forward to February of 2014, there was a coup in Kiev. First thing the new government immediately recognized by Washington said was, we want to join NATO and we want to ban Russian as an official language. So what am I saying here? I'm saying that we have the document. We have the cable. This is what Julian trades in, documents. Okay, it's the kind of thing that intelligence analysts or detectives lust over, you know, documentary evidence. So we have the document where the Russians took the trouble to say, look, if this happens, if you so much as try, this is going to be the result. That was in 2008. It took 6 years before they tried. And we know what the result was. So there's no excuse, no excuse at all, for our government not knowing what to expect if we did a coup in Kiev, which some have called the most blatant coup in history.
Bill Binney, let's stay on the same theme. The Iraq war logs were the logs that were provided to WikiLeaks by Chelsea Manning, recently released after several years in prison. Those videos had been known about by Reuters, the agency, the media agency that had employed the journalist who was shot down in cold blood, unarmed journalist, along with a number of civilians by a U.S. attack helicopter pilot. Those videos were chilling. They went all around the world. Ultimately, Chelsea Manning went to prison. The media played those videos over and over again. They demonstrated that the U.S. government was tolerating the commission of war crimes or ordering the war crimes. And yet Chelsea Manning went to prison. Julian Assange is in an asylum for 5 years. And the UN declares that asylum to be a form of arbitrary detention, meaning he should be released, according to the United Nations. And yet the people who perpetrated the war crimes or commissioned them or ordered them, they're going around making speeches, writing books, making lots of money, and being treated as esteemed statesmen for the U.S. government in the media. I mean, it's kind of a chilling form of hypocrisy.
Well, I mean, I look at that as just criminals cashing in on their crimes. I mean, that's fundamentally what they're doing. Nobody's challenged them or even addressing the crimes that they've committed. They're all trying to avoid it. This is called the cover-up. Everybody in government is involved in this in one way or another, so they all are covering up for one another. The Department of Justice covers up for the crimes that the CIA and the DOD and various other people have committed, like the war crimes for the collateral murder movie. That's a war crime. They just killed people randomly, then waited for other people to come in and help them because they were bleeding on the street, and then they killed them too. I mean, that's just an outright war crime. And nobody from the Department of Defense or anybody else has said anything. Well, that tells the world that, you know, we the U.S., have the right to go around anywhere in the world and kill anybody we want. This is insane. We need to hold these people accountable for what they did, and all the people who are part of the cover-up, both in the House and Senate and in the courts and at the White House and various other places. Those people covered up these crimes, and they're attacking the whistleblowers because they want to stop the people who are exposing the crimes that they're committing. This is really pretty simple. These are criminals trying to hide all their crimes from the general public.
Colleen Raleigh, Julian Assange was expected to make a public announcement today at the last moment, that announcement was abruptly canceled. Again, where do you think Julian Assange's case is? Is there a way out for him out of that five-year detention, asylum, what the UN calls arbitrary detention? Is there a way out? And what do you think is going on perhaps behind the scenes? Is the British government possibly willing to do something? Would a Jeremy Corbyn government, should it form, which again is still unlikely but not impossible? What's the fate of Julian Assange? Where does it go?
Well, only time will tell, because there's just too many factors that we don't know the future about. But as it stands now, the Swedish government did drop its investigation that they were in a convoluted way, saying that he had to come to Sweden and then he was probably going to be whisked off to the United States. So at least Sweden seems to be out of the picture. The United Nations, I think that's one of the bright spots here, has, as Bill Binney just said, other nations are able to see the truth of this situation a lot better than we here in the United States. And so the United Nations has some entities now that have, deplored this holding him for 5 years, and are it's asylum, but it's still involuntary on Assange's part. So that's helping, I'm sure, and we'll have to see. You know, Corbyn's win. He gave a speech, talking about the so-called war on terrorism, making things worse. And so there must be some substantial number of people that are finally starting to see the light on some of this. I wanted to go back to First Amendment, because Pompeo, the new CIA director, along with, I think also FBI Director Comey when he was still in, they were giving speeches about, a month and a half, 2 months ago. It looked like they were trying to ramp up something. And it was a loophole around the First Amendment by calling Assange and WikiLeaks, if I get it right, it was something like a hostile intelligence actor or something like that. They came up with a new term, which is, it's out of the John Yoo playbook here. Came up with a new term, calling him something that would mean that he's not a publisher. And I remember Comey was asked a question about that, and he said, "Well, this is just intelligence porn," is what was his term. And I thought that was funny, because here Comey now has come out that he was the one that had to read to Trump this pornographic memo, specious dossier that was concocted as part of opposition research of Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. And it was Comey that had to read that, talking about your porn in private, by the way, in a setup that was privately done. And Comey even said, "Well, I didn't want to look like J. Edgar Hoover, looking like I had something on him." It's incredible. So these guys that are now, when they were ramping this up and doing these speeches, I thought to myself, well, maybe there are some deliberations now about not, at one point, storming the embassy or something. Who knows? They were trying to see if the media and the public opinion, maybe they were floating this or something to see how public opinion would take it. So, again, I can't predict the future, but I think Assange is, for the meantime, just safe in that embassy and is probably going to have to wait it out at least for a while.
Okay, that was the voice of Colleen Raleigh, former FBI official, whistleblower. We're also talking with Ray McGovern and Bill Binney about Julian Assange, 5 years since he sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. You are listening to Loud and Clear. We'll be back.
Loud and Clear. Loud and Clear.
You are listening to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker. To discuss the importance of Julian Assange, 5 years after Mr. Assange sought refuge, asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy, we are talking with Ray McGovern. He's here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Ray is an activist and a former CIA analyst whose writings can be found on raymcgovern.com. We're also joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent who, in 2002, was named Time Magazine Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. And we are joined from Maryland by Bill Binney, a former NSA technical director, legendary whistleblower. Again, welcome back, Ray, Colleen, and Bill. In our second segment, Ray McGovern, I want to start off by talking about how WikiLeaks jumped back in the news in the most, I don't know, notorious kind of way during the 2016 election. WikiLeaks revealed DNC emails. Those emails show that Bernie Sanders was the target of the DNC leadership. They were trying to sabotage his campaign for the benefit of Hillary Clinton. But the Democratic Party then told all of the people who might read that sort of compromising email or emails, don't read them because they come from Russia. And WikiLeaks is an agent of Russia. WikiLeaks is nothing but an arm of Russia. And that was said over and over and over again, so much so that no evidence was required, just, you know, constant assertion. Now, the whole basis of that story, Ray McGovern, was the idea that the FBI and James Comey apparently told the DNC about, which was that the DNC was the target of a hack and that the hackers were Russians. Now, they asked the Democratic Party for their server, and the Democratic Party said, no, we don't want to give you the server. And the FBI, being the humble and weak organization that it is without subpoena power, did not issue a subpoena, could not get into the DNC server, and thus had to rely on a private party, CrowdStrike, who then told them, yes, this has the fingerprints of Russia all over it. And thus it became true. But then we learned again later, recently, from another WikiLeaks release, the Vault 7 release, that that was very probably also a U.S. intelligence agency setup because they have those tools. Go ahead. Talk about Vault 7.
Well, if you want to know why the U.S. government hates Julian Assange, is because he has this magical ability to come by, original CIA documents. He's got a treasure trove of them. He started releasing them earlier this year, and the third release occurred on March 31st. Now, it was part three, and it talked about a program called Marble. Now, when I want to understand these things, I always ask Bill Binney.
Luckily, he's here.
Yeah, and if Bill can correct me, but what he told me was, Ray, this is an incredible program. This is one that I know they worked on for about 15 years, that it all told required 700 million lines of code. And so I said, Bill, that sounds like a lot. Now, what does that mean? And he said, Ray, each line of code costs $25. Do the math, man. Do the math. So we're talking about billions of dollars. Now, what does this program enable the CIA and NSA to do? It enables them, by their own words in these documents, to obfuscate. Nice word, huh? Obfuscate. In other words, to hack into systems, computers, servers, and disguise who it was that hacked in. And not only that, but they work in five languages, Arabic, Farsi, Chinese, Korean, and Cyrillic, Russian. And what they can do is leave telltale signs behind when they hack in so that people who are not as sophisticated, who don't have billions of dollars for these programs, figure, as CrowdStrike apparently did, whoa, there's some Cyrillic. Oh, and there's the name of the first head of the KGB, then a first name and patronymic. You know, give me a break. So what we have here is a release that occurred on the 31st of March. Bill Binney briefed me on it that morning. I talked on RT twice that day and on two other channels, but never was invited to CNN or anything else. Matter of fact, this has been suppressed. New York Times, having talked about the first two releases, did not talk about the third at all. It doesn't take a genius to put those dots together. Not only did the CIA have that capability, it was used in 2016. So I guess, you know, who was it used against? Did the Chinese, or the Koreans, or the Arabs, or Iran? Did they complain? No. So what this is was pretty clearly a setup. Now, you mentioned, just to finish this off, you mentioned, Brian, that James Comey, powerful head of the FBI, somehow didn't get access to the computers. The computers at the Democratic National Committee. Now, so when he was asked about this before the House Intelligence Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee, he's got a squirm and he says, now I know, to do the job right, to get the proper forensics, you really have to have physical control of the machines. But we didn't do that. But CrowdStrike is a really good. Now, why is it that James Comey didn't simply say, I'm sending my agents over there to the DNC. We have the proper warrants or whatever required. We're going to get those things. We're going to look at it, see who really hacked in and left this Cyrillic writing, okay? He didn't do that. Why didn't you do that? Well, simple answer there. If he sent his technical people in there, they would have said, my God, Mr. Comey, you won't believe what we discovered here. It's so sophisticated, so expensive. A CrowdStrike could never figure out what went on. You know, the only people who could help here it would be NSA. Do you want us to go ask our NSA colleagues? And Comey would have said, no, don't do that. See, Comey, NSA, and CIA are this cabal, are this deep state, and they're in very much in operation to not only have done these things, but to disguise these things. And now they have a very close ally, Bob Mueller, who enjoys an undeserved reputation for integrity. It's all one big happy family. We'll have to see how it comes out, but it's not going to come out well if it depends on Mueller, Comey, and those other fellows I just mentioned.
Bill Binney, same question to you, because you were the technical director of NSA. And Ray went to you to get your advice, because you actually, unlike so many people who talk about this subject endlessly, you actually know what you're talking about. What did you think when you saw the Vault 7? Was it new to you, or was the revelation itself newsworthy? And also, why would the Russians use – was it Felix Dzerzhinsky was the head of the first Cheka? Yeah, why would they Russians, if they were hacking into the DNC, leave these kind of clues? Again, that CrowdStrike, even CrowdStrike – which is led, of course, and owned by a virulently anti-Putin Russian affluent person. Anyway, when you saw Vault 7, what'd you think?
I thought it was just a part of what NSA had shared with CIA, and plus whatever CIA could gather from other sources they had. In other words, all of these attacks on firewalls, operating systems, network switches, servers, all of that. They have known about some of them for several decades, and they've been using them. I mean, what it meant was the intelligence community of the U.S., mainly NSA and CIA, could open up anybody's communications and look in their computers and servers and see what they're saying, what they're doing, and what they've got. And they never told anybody else, so that they never fixed these problems. So that meant that everybody else in the world was vulnerable to attack. And so, you know, what happens is, as a result of that, I mean, the Chinese hack OPM, you know, they hack various other people and other people in the world, hacker communities and groups and other countries and their governments hack everybody else. And how many people get hacked? Who knows? Every day they're trying it all over the world, and you hear about them complaining about it. But the point is, they left all these vulnerabilities out there, and nobody was secure. So that when everybody got attacked, or when OPM got attacked, or things like that, our government could go out there and say, we need more money for cybersecurity. This I call a basic swindle. Instead of protecting you, they leave you vulnerable, so you get attacked, so they ask for more money from you to protect you, when in fact they never fix the problems that they know about. I would argue they should fix the problems they know about so that maybe we'll have some cybersecurity. It's a swindle. I mean, all these things, that worm that went around the world here a couple of weeks ago, that was only one of the attacks. There are thousands of them in this data from the Vault 7 and also at NSA. Some of that material that was released earlier to Shadow Group, they have them also. There's thousands of attacks in there, and that was only one that we experienced there the other weeks, a few weeks ago. So, you know, be prepared for some more ups and downs until our intelligence community stops being stupid and fixes the problems they know about. then we might have some security in the cyber world. Until then, they're going to be swindling us for more money. We, the public, we, the taxpayers, should say, you get no more money until you fix all the problems you already know that were already compromised in Vault 7 and also with the shadow group, you know, the on the NSA leaks from the fellow that was arrested there a few months ago.
Ray, you wanted to jump in, and then I'm going to go to Colleen, because I want to ask you, Colleen, as a former FBI official, I want to ask you about what's going on with the FBI investigation, which, of course, at the base of it is the revelations by WikiLeaks that the U.S. intelligence agencies are now saying proved not that the Democratic Party was trying to steal Bernie Sanders' nomination, but that the Russians were trying to take over America. But go ahead, Ray. You want to jump in?
Yeah, just a small point here. You know, we intelligence analysts and security people, we try really hard not to exaggerate. And so I need to just correct you on a minor thing. You said that CrowdStrike found Felix Dzerzhinsky. Well, no, they were much too clever for that. What they wrote was Felix Yabunovich, his first name and patronymic. And so it would be a challenge for the intelligence analyst to figure out what his last name was, right? It was so clear. But, you know, it's really interesting. Felix Edmundovich, that could only be one person. That was Dzerzhinsky, the first head of the Cheka, which was the precursor for the KGB. A little bit obvious, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't say this had to be a state actor because it's so sophisticated. And what they left behind was some Cyrillic. And the first name and patronymic of the first head of the Cheka didn't parse.
Colleen, it would be like U.S. hackers in Iran leaving some sort of J. Edgar Hoover here. J. Edgar Hoover was here. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. And I just wanted to add a little bit to things I've read and heard about CrowdStrike, because as Benny mentioned, that about creating the NSA creating a need for cybersecurity because they're the ones, you know, planting all these vulnerabilities. In addition to them justifying their budget, all of these CrowdStrike-type cybersecurity corporations have just burgeoned. And in fact, I think CrowdStrike's stock, I mean, went into, you know, I don't know the numbers, but, you know, millions of dollars just soared up after getting all this press. It's my understanding that CrowdStrike came up with its conclusions that the Russians had hacked one day after finding it. Okay, so really short, no real analysis. It was done right away, and again, it's head by Alperovich, who's an extremely biased anti, against the Russians, etc. And I also read, this is interesting, because they have done this, you know, they're a corporation that works for other entities, and they've been wrong. Although James Comey testifies that they're so highly reputed, whatever, CrowdStrike, that the FBI doesn't need to examine these servers, that we'll leave it to CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike's actually been proven wrong in some other countries in doing their analysis. And I think even in France and Germany, there are some cases where there were similar, whatever they call them, fingerprints. And so that wasn't necessarily CrowdStrike, but maybe a related cybersecurity companies. The French intelligence agency has actually said that looking at some of the same indicia, it's not the Russians. And so this, I can tell you right now, when you ask a question about what is the FBI doing about this, you know, good question. Are they looking at any of those things? Are they looking at the fact that CrowdStrike, whom they're relying on, has been proven wrong, and that related cybersecurity companies have already been proven wrong with similar indicia? You know, probably not. Here's another good question about the FBI investigation. You know, there could have been an argument that in the lead up to the election, you couldn't just grab the DNC servers. Okay, maybe that you could argue that it would have fouled up the election if you would have grabbed the DNC servers. However, what's the excuse now? Why can't they examine them afterwards? I mean, that's a good question that I don't think anyone's ever asked and answered. But my opinion of the investigation is, at least I've never heard, is that they aren't doing anything now. Okay, so what are they doing? What, collecting, he said, she said, you know, signal informants, you know, that type of thing. I think to a large extent, they're probably letting a lot of it go to Robert Mueller, former FBI Director Robert Mueller, who's now the special counsel. And if you look at the history of special counsels, which is really a lot of people have criticized over the years, especially the Watergate one, because once you give full you give this green light to a special counsel, the sky's the limit, for starters, how many millions of dollars. And in the case of Watergate, it started out as an investigation of a land deal. And 7 years later, they were investigating a sex affair with someone who had been in junior high when the investigation of the land deal started. And that's, frankly, why even Congress reined it back in. They reined the special counsel back in because it was so long and it was so, you know, it just goes pivots from one thing to another. And I expect that that's probably what's going to happen with this investigation of Russian meddling. In fact, what you can sense is that the Russian meddling itself, or hacking, seems to have taken a very much a back seat, and the front seat now is, you know, obstruction and whatever. So there, this idea that the meddling is going on isn't even being talked about anymore. And, you know, maybe years from now we'll find out there wasn't much to it. But I think that don't have a lot of trust that the FBI will actually come up with the truth.
Right. It appears in all ways to be pure politics at this point. That was the voice of Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent. We're also talking to Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst and legendary NSA whistleblower Bill Binney. You are listening to Loud and Clear. We'll be back.
Loud and Clear. Loud and Clear.
You are listening to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker. Time flies. 5 years ago today, Julian Assange sought refuge, asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. He's still there. The United Nations declares his stay there to be a form of arbitrary detention, meaning he should be able to walk free. But of course, he is still there. We're joined for the full hour in studio by Ray McGovern, an activist and former CIA analyst whose writings can be found at raymcgovern.com. We're joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent. And we're joined from Maryland by Bill Binney, a former NSA technical director who became a whistleblower. Ray McGovern, I want to help the audience understand why exactly Julian Assange is stuck in that embassy. People, you know, of course, would say, well, he should face the consequences. He should go through a legal process. If he's a journalist, he should come out. I want to play a short clip. It's a clip from Fox, I believe, or someplace, a special guest on one of those shows. Bob Beckel, he's a pundit who was the campaign manager for Walter Mondale way back in 1984. This is him talking about Julian Assange and what he favors, which would, I guess, be extrajudicial murder. Let's listen to Bob Beckel.
The other thing is, who gets hurt from this? The American people. The way to deal with in the national security of the United States, the way to deal with this is pretty simple. We got special ops forces. I mean, a dead man can't leak stuff. This guy's a traitor, a treasonous, and he has broken every law of the United States. The guy ought to be. And I'm not for the death penalty. So if I'm not for the death penalty, I only want to do it illegally. Shoot the son of a.
Okay, Ray. There's Bob Beckel, former Walter Mondale campaign manager. That, I mean, in addition to everything else, calling for shooting down the assassination of Julian Assange, he also accused him of treason, which I thought was interesting since Julian Assange is Australian. But I guess everybody's an American now. Go ahead.
Well, I guess I'll hearken back to my father was a lawyer. He had an expression, people should retire when they reach the age of statutory senility. And that's the only way I can explain the coarse conversation that you just quoted. Why can Julian Assange not come out when the UN has said twice at the highest level that he's a subject of arbitrary detention? Well, you know, you have to look to, President Putin for the answer to that. recently. He was careful to put out, to allege at least, that what you have in Western Europe, or even Eastern Europe now, you have vassal states. And, of course, the U.K. is the epitome of a vassal state. If Washington says, don't let them out, well, you know, Prime Minister May is not even going to say, may I, you know? And so that's the situation now. Now, what's hopeful here is that Jeremy Corbyn may come in. And it will be really interesting to see if a Corbyn government has the guts that has not been displayed by any British government for decades, and whether he would say, this is wrong, it's illegal, the UN has said so, we're going to let him find a place where he can have asylum outside, he can go outside in the garden and be protected, and then we'll have to worry about whether the special forces that Bechtel talked about won't be sicked on Julian Assange. Last time I saw Julian, it was just a couple of days before the election in the embassy in Ecuador. He was enlivened. He had the distinct impression that he had contributed everything he could to let voters know what was going on. And he had done that in a very, very responsible way. He had just given an interview to John Pilger, which got on British TV and RT and so forth. And yet he looked exhausted. He hadn't been outdoors for months. He has this pallor, you know. But he was doing his job, okay? And he and we are all in the same job. We're trying to spread some truth around, documentary truth. We don't fool around with this stuff. We analyze it. Julian doesn't analyze it. He just puts it out. And, you know, as you mentioned, the people that I've privileged to be on this radio show with, Colleen Rowley, Bill Binney, Chelsea Manning, who's not here, but what I'm saying here is that we have an award we give every year. We call it Sam Adams Associates. We call it the Sam Adams Award for Integrity and Intelligence. And we gave it to Colleen Rowley first 15 years ago, Bill Binney much more recently. We gave it to Chelsea Manning. We gave it to Ed Snowden in Moscow. And we gave it to Julian Assange in 2010, as soon as he had made that incredible contribution of disclosing to the world what our poor poverty draft soldiers are trained to do and what they are corrupted into doing, that incredible collateral murder video that showed not only how brutalized the two Reuters employees and the 10 others that were killed, but how brutalized our own forces were, the way they talked about what they had just done. This is a service to humanity, and those people that don't want that kind of detail to get out, well, those are the people that are perpetrating these crimes.
Bill Binney, when we started today's show, we heard a clip from Julian Assange where he pays homage to you and to Tom Drake and to John Kiriakou and other whistleblowers. Again, for all of those people who say, well, you know, just if you're a whistleblower, just come forward, tell the truth, use the process. Then if you're right, you're right. If you're not right, okay, then you'll face consequences. Julian Assange is not naive about anything. Edward Snowden understood because of what happened to you, Bill Binney, and what happened to Tom Drake, and what happened to John Kiriakou. John Kiriakou, for instance, went to prison for CIA torture, not because he tortured, but because he exposed the torture. And it was the Obama administration that picked up the case when George W. Bush couldn't convict him, couldn't carry the case forward, and actually sent him to prison. What happened to you, Bill Binney? I mean, just help the audience understand what happens to a whistleblower.
Well, in my case, it wasn't just me. It was also Diane Rourke from the House Intelligence Committee, Kirk Wiebe, and Ed Loomis, who were all came from NSA with me. And we filed our complaint to the Department of Justice Inspector General's office, as we are required under regulation for employment with the U.S. government, against NSA's corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse. and criminality. And so they did their investigation, but all that did, and we found out recently from an inspector general's whistleblower from the inspector general's office, that they then turned around and gave our names to the FBI as the people who are probably responsible for the New York Times leak. Well, I'm here to say that at that time, Comey was deputy attorney general, and Mueller was just in as the director of FBI. Those two people knew that we were not a part of that leak because they had all the data from the Stellar Wind program from NSA showing all the contacts of everybody in the United States with whoever they contacted, and via phones or emails or any of the other communications mechanisms they had. They had all of that material and knew we were not part of it. In fact, they knew that Thomas Tam was was the one leaking to the New York Times. They already knew that because he was the lawyer in the Department of Justice who was responsible to write the request for warrants from the FISA court. But he was seeing that they already had wiretaps and were reading telephones and emails of people and using that data to try to get warrants. Well, I mean, that was a felony every time they did it, and so that's why he leaked that data to the New York Times. So they knew already who it was who did that, and they already knew that we didn't. But just to keep us quiet from all the covering up all of the corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse going on inside our government, they attacked us with the FBI, sending a raiding party to our houses. They did that. They also attempted to indict us three separate times under the Espionage Act, of course, trying to send us away for 35 years, falsifying evidence in the process. But every time they did that, we caught them. You know, we know these people and what they do and how they operate, so we caught them at what they were doing and threatened them with malicious prosecution. That's the only reason we weren't indicted. So we took the proper channels, as Senator Feinstein said, use the proper channels, and everybody else in our government who's also involved in this cover-up of all of these crimes, by the way, they're also involved in this. So is Comey and Mueller. That's why I can't understand why we're allowing criminals to make judgments on other criminals and cover up for one another. Why should we allow criminals to do that? Why don't we bring someone in from the outside who's totally untainted with all the political crap and all of the money and the military, industrial, intelligence, governmental complex influence, and have them do a proper job at going after not just them, not just Comey and Mueller and all the others, but everybody in government that's been involved in this criminality and basically what I call treason against the founding principles of this nation. That's what we should do.
Colleen Raleigh, again, you were an FBI agent. You became a whistleblower. As I mentioned in the beginning, Time magazine named you and two other whistleblowers as Person of the Year in 2002. I want to ask you to help the audience understand the difference between leakers and leakers. Because there are different kinds of leaks. You have whistleblower leaks where people at great cost to themselves expose government wrongdoing, expose something that the public doesn't know but that is in the public interest. And those are the people who are getting persecuted and prosecuted. But then you have this investigation, the Mueller investigation going on, and earlier the Comey FBI, NSA, CIA investigation into the so-called Russia meddling. There are leaks coming. I mean, that's a sieve. I mean, there's leaks coming out of that thing left and right. I don't even understand how you can have an investigation when your investigators are obviously the leakers, and all of the leaking under those circumstances seems to be to not prove a point, but to generate a public perception. Talk about the difference between those leaks and whistleblower leaks.
Well, thank you very much. It's a very timely issue because, as you just said, we have all of these leaks. And in fact, Comey, I think he's not doing a very good job. And I've written an article, Mueller and Comey, Russiagate, detailing some of the things that Bill just mentioned. You know, they have a real sordid past in having presided over a whole bunch of different abuses and really highly illegal actions. But the Comey, to his credit, testified that one of the articles in the, I think it was Washington Post, that claimed to have many official sources, and these are called, you know, these are leaks, I think at least four official sources, top level official sources, was completely false. So at least that's out there, that one of these articles is completely false. There's a test for whistleblowing, and one of the things is it's got to be true. Okay, so if you don't have a document to prove it, it does have to turn out to be true, that it's true fraud, waste, abuse, illegal action, or a danger to public safety. So that's one of the things. The other thing is the motivation. So if you're politically motivated, if you're self-motivated, maybe you're selling secrets to make money. Of course, that would not be whistleblowing. But this has all been very much confused and blurred in the media. They're treating James Comey's leak to the New York Times, which was designed to get a special counsel. That's because he testified. Well, the reason I leaked my memo of my conversation with Trump to my friend, who then gave it to, who was under directions from me to give it to the newspaper, was because I thought it would get a special counsel. And of course, it was just his top friend and buddy for years and years, top collaborator Robert Mueller. So, yeah, leaks are a gray area because you know, like Deep Throat, for instance, was not motivated for a public good. He was motivated politically.
Just for the younger audience, that was the source for Watergate with the Washington Post.
Right. Good old Mark Felt, he was like number two or three in the FBI, and he got mad at Hoover for not being promoted, and so he became Deep Throat. He was not a whistleblower, actually. He was technically more of a leaker, and again, that's kind of gray area. He was motivated for himself. There's another category that's even worse than pure leaking, and that's what Scooter Libby did. This is the planting of false information, and that's going on. This is what I just mentioned. Comey is talking about that Washington Post article. That was the planting of false information, and so our news is treating the New York Times instead of Washington Post. Yeah, excuse me, it was New York Times. I get them mixed up, but it was the New York Times that. So this planting, which Scooter Libby, in the notorious case, was that he told Judith Miller that aluminum tubes were designed for enrichment of uranium, which was completely false. And then it was all deliberately concocted with, as Bill Binney called him, Darth Cheney, in order for him to hold that paper up the next day and say it's out there, it's public, et cetera. That kind of thing is actually probably now predominant in news. It's not true whistleblowing. It's either leaking or it's actually this planting of false information. And again, I don't think people have been very careful about that because they haven't gone into, you know, looking at the motivations. They haven't gone into the truth of these things. Our news likes to just kind of blur it all together and say we get a reporter's. They don't have a reporter's privilege, but for them, they don't want to make those distinctions. From the public standpoint, it would make no sense to be giving a reporter's privilege, for instance, to someone like Scooter Libby or anyone else planting false information.
Excellent point. Ray McGovern, we're almost out of time, but we have a situation where, or as a current context where fake news is the thing. And yet what Colleen is saying is that the intelligence agencies themselves are engaged and politicians themselves are engaged in deliberately creating fake news and leaking it to the media. And then the media sounds like an echo chamber. Go ahead. We have about 2.5 minutes left.
Well, that's where Julian Assange comes in. These are documents, okay? These are acknowledged by places like the CIA to be documents. Now, you can't fool around with documents. And when Julian Assange says his record is 100% pure on this, he's correct. He's as pure as Caesar's wife. He doesn't mess around with the documents. Now, who does mess around with documents and so forth? John Brennan. He's a fellow that we haven't talked much about here. He sort of disappeared down the same rabbit hole that George Tenet, his patron and predecessor as head of the CIA, did. So what we have here is a situation where all this kind of stuff is being leaked. Brennan was the leaker. As a matter of fact, during the fall, the Wall Street Journal openly complained the CIA is not talking to us. They're just talking to the New York Times, just talking to the Washington Post. So long story short, Brennan has done a terrible job in terms of protecting his sources. If Julian Assange can get these very sensitive documents showing how the CIA can hack in and disguise and obfuscate and so forth, well, they may be very good at hacking in, but they're not very, very, very good protecting this. So what I'm saying here is that John Brennan has sort of disappeared. We had to look at him. And what we have is one person that stands out head and shoulders above all the others. It's a man I admire greatly. His name is Julian Assange, and he should be lauded, and he should be freed, and he should be seen as the person that he is, a truth teller, a rare commodity in these days.
We've been joined for the full hour by three truth tellers. I wish that the American people could hear Bill Binney and Colleen Raleigh and Ray McGovern, hear the truth. Talk about that which is not in the mainstream media, but that which you can find here on Loud and Clear, that which you can find on Radio Sputnik. Well, we're out of time. We will be back tomorrow. Be sure to go to our Facebook page, Loud and Clear with Brian Becker, for daily updates. If you enjoy the show and you want your friends to hear it, let us know by liking the page on Facebook. Remember, telling the truth is important, but to make a difference, it has to be loud and clear. We are out of here.
Loud and clear.